Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Hey, my name is Eric Johnson, and welcome to GoTo Unscripted. You've probably seen us before. Again, my name is Eric Johnson. I'm a principal developer for serverless at AWS. I work for AWS. Dave, tell them who you are.
Hello, everyone. I am Dave Boyne. I also work at AWS, focused on like serverless, event-driven architectures, and things like that. I actually work with the Eric Johnson. I like that.
I have an article of the Eric Johnson rather than, you know, Eric Johnson. So. Yes, Dave is also a developer advocate. We both work for the developer advocacy team. And today we're going to talk about something that really pairs up with serverless a lot. It's almost interchangeable, not quite, but, and that's EDA. And if you don't know what EDA is, I warned Dave, I want you to define EDA. In a nutshell, do the elevator pitch. What is EDA?
Event-driven architecture.
Thank you, Dave. Let's move on. Okay. All right. Keep going. No, I'm serious. Go ahead.
EDA obviously stands for event-driven architectures, for those who do not know or watching. But it's a way of like communicating between systems using messages, I guess, using events. This thing, if you look at the high level, you tend to hear things about producers and consumers and channels and brokers and topics. But I tell you what, as soon as you unlift it, you dive into so much details about event-driven architectures. And many people are using them because they allow us to build decoupled, scalable, resilient architectures. But as I said, you know, there is tons to cover in this space. And hopefully we're going to cover some of that today with Eric.
Yeah, and I'm going to climb into a little bit, but I want to show you how I define it. Okay, so what I do. So when you think about event-driven architecture, first of all, Dave's is better than mine, so I'm not correcting Dave in any way, shape, or form. Dave, while it doesn't look like it, is infinitely smarter than I am. Well, let's not go infinitely, but somewhat smarter than I am, especially in this area. But I love to explain it. When you think about when you build architectures, people do APIs, they're polling, they're calling. In event-driven architecture, it comes down to this, and you'll want to write this down, so I'll pause to let you get a pencil and paper. Okay, so here's how it works. Something happens, and we react. That's it. Dave, what do you think? How was that?
Yeah, mic drop. I think we can sum up there, can't we?
We can just let it go. So, in all honesty, Dave has done. Mm-hmm. Dave's kind of the expert in this area. He's one of the thought leaders and has done a ton of work around explaining EDA at colossal scale. I mean, he's written all kinds of I don't know about books, but he's written all kinds of blogs. He's done videos. He's done speaking. In fact, shameless plug here. If you're watching this before May 14th, 2024, Dave will be keynoting the actual EDA day in London. So if you're interested in that, look it up. EDA day, London, 2024, Dave keynoting. But the reason we're here today is we're going to talk about this massive volume of information Dave has put together in what we call EDA visuals. Dave, what prompted the visuals and why do you do it? What are you doing?
What are you doing, Dave? So last year I started this project called EDA Visuals. So a few years ago, I started diving kind of deeper into event-driven architectures. I was actually, before I joined AWS, I was building event-driven architectures with leading teams. I kind of found this the paradigm in this architecture that just made sense to me, right? And I was kind of like, wow, why don't I need to dive deeper into this because I saw agility that I'd never seen before. Mm-hmm. So I dived into EDA And cut a long story short, so last year I started reading a lot more books, a lot more content over that time.
So proud of you.
And there's something called, so I started trying this whole second brain thing, right? I don't know, Eric, have you heard about this?
You're going to have to fill me in on this. Yeah, okay. I have no idea what you're talking about.
But this whole like movement, it's more popular now actually than it was, I guess, a couple of years ago. But the whole idea is it's like this note-taking system. That can help you collect information and also find links between information and even kind of write content around this information. So I'll give you some examples. So there's one in particular I follow called the Zettel casting method. Okay, have you heard of that? Is this new?
Let's say I have.
Okay. So the whole idea of Zettel casting apparently means note box, right? It's popular by German sociologist called Nicholas Luhmann. I think I got that right. Okay. And in his lifetime, he wrote 70 books and over 400 articles. Mm-hmm. And people were saying, how can you do this, right? This is before computers, I believe. So he developed this note-taking method, and you can see this online and probably share a link actually to this video. But you can actually, so the whole idea anyway is you read something and you take a note about it, right? And the note has to be something, you're not copying it, but the note has to be, what do you find interesting about this? So if I'm reading Eric's blog post on Avenger of an Architectures, and
something happens, we react.
So why is that important to me? So then I write this down, and what I'm getting at with this is you end up with these notes, so like 10 different notes, 10 different blog posts, whatever, as you consume and you learn content. And the whole idea is then you transform them into what they're called like permanent notes. So these are literature notes. So what happens is you get these notes and then you transform them into something bigger or some collected vision. An example would be, Eric, you talked about like facts and events, something happened, we listened to it, right? Now, if I was reading some other blog post, maybe about some serverless stuff, or maybe some community blog post, or whatever it might be, or maybe some Kubernetes blog post, whatever it might be, someone was also talking about events or messages or this kind of stuff. And you're kind of interesting as you go through these notes, you find connection between the notes, and then you put these in something called a permanent note. And from a permanent note, you can actually write blog posts from it or books from it. And the whole idea of this whole thing is you have this collection of these notes just growing. So I've been doing it about a year and a half now. So I have like a perfect one is around event design. So what goes inside our events? So 2 years, about actually 18 months ago, we had our first EDA day in London, and I did a talk around event design. And I used this method to kind of build up this talk. And now I have these permanent notes where I can go back and learn all of this stuff and create more links. Anyway, how is this relevant to visuals that I've done? So what
I'm going to stop you for a sec, because honestly, I thought we were just going to be talking. Of course, this is unscripted, so you never know where we're going. But I thought we were going to be talking about the EDA. But this is really fascinating, especially, and I know Eric always, if you know me at all, I joke a lot. But I have the worst memory on the planet. I don't retain things. And so that's just really interesting to me, especially in our industry, right? I mean, there's 372,000 services on AWS. Don't quote me. That's probably not the right number. But there are a lot, you know, and same with the other clouds and same with the, you know, the languages and the syntax and things we have to retain. Mm-hmm. So this is really interesting to me because I've seen Dave. So here's what Dave is an expert at. Dave, and this doesn't mean I like you. Okay. I'm just going to say these are facts, not emotions. Right. So I've seen Dave puts into practice as he learns, and he does it in a really cool way. In fact, you like when we talked about Gen AI, when Gen AI first came out, you started learning how does Gen AI work, and then you wrote the storytelling application. That do you still use that? Do you still tell your kids stories with this?
So funny about that one. I've actually moved on to, I still need to figure it out, but I want to use Gen AI to, my son is into Harry Potter, right? So I want to use Gen AI to write Harry Potter trivia questions and print it using, we build this application called Serverless Espresso. If you've not seen this, it's a coffee making serverless app, but with it, we have a printer, right? It prints out receipts. So what I want to do is put this printer in his room, and every time randomly during the day, I want to use Gen AI to print a trivia question about Harry Potter. So this is the kind of thing you can do in the Gen AI. Yeah, so that'd be pretty
cool.
That's
super cool. Yeah, that's super cool. I didn't mean to take us astray, I don't know what I meant by that, but I don't mean to take us off path here. But the same comes with the EDA as you were. I love this idea as you were, I mean, you've always, like I said, kind of been ahead of the curve on EDA. You've had this really good understanding grasp of it. But it's been interesting to watch you learn more and share more through this process. So really love that approach. Dave never learns in a vacuum. He always shares what he learns. He's constantly. It's one of the reasons that I was here before Dave, and when we were talking about hiring you, Dave, it was like you're constantly pouring into the community all this stuff, and I absolutely love it. So
yeah. I think that's something I thought about recently, actually. We're kind of going off a bit of topic here, but
that's
is around the, but going, bring it back to EDA, actually, is, it's so easy as a developer advocate, and Eric, you probably know this, because we're surrounded by leaders in the space. We're surrounded by customers doing a lot of cool stuff, a lot of businesses doing some great stuff. And it's so easy to kind of, be in this echo chamber of people doing this, right? So event-driven architectures, I speak to many, many people doing this, doing it great. But the key is really that what I find with the visuals and with the content in general is you need to step away from that and actually figure out, okay, well, there's so many people, the way I like to visualize it is a mountain, right? So we're at the top, we think we're at the top of a mountain, we're probably not. But let's say we were around the top or whatever else in this bubble. Is like, how do we, there's so many people climbing up and trying to learn about event-driven architectures. And that's where I kind of put my efforts in with the visuals as an example to say, okay, here's how you do that.
It's breadcrumbs.
Exactly. Yeah. Just kind of teaching people. But going back to the Zettelkasten, and so what I decided to do in the visuals last year for myself is like, I'm writing all this stuff. I'm learning about cloud events, bi-directional events. I'm learning about all this stuff, which is really cool, but I'm a very visual person and I like visuals to help me learn. So I started creating visuals for myself. It's like, okay, let's talk about cloud events, which is my recent visual. What are cloud events? What is binary mode? What is structured mode? What are these different things? And what I find is when you visualize it in a bite-sized chunk, you can actually look at something in this note-taking system and see like, okay, that's what it was. And then one day last year, I just decided to share a visual on Twitter and on socials, and people seem to, love them. And then just shared them. I wrote a website on serverlessland.com. So I created a new page on here and just put visuals on there. And I was doing about one a day when it first came out. And then I continue to add to it now. And then, it's grown loads. I think about 2.8 million people or impressions it's had so far. So people tend to love visual ways of learning, which I find.
Well, I think it also, I don't do the Zebra Geister stuff, whatever you're talking about book is, but I'm interested in it. I was looking up on Google Zebra Geister and I couldn't find it, but I will. It's interesting to me, I'm visual as well. I learned by breaking and fixing. If I haven't broken it and fixed it, I don't understand. But I also learn in very small chunks, right? I think sometimes we try to boil the ocean is a term we use at AWS a lot is we try to, do all this stuff or understand all this stuff. But the EDA visuals are very small. They're exactly what you described. They're thoughts, right? They're small. Let's encompass in this, learn this concept, kind of the blinders on. Then we move to the next one. And it's really cool. And if I'm not mistaken, on this site, you also generate a PDF Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. So okay. What I was doing, going back on that actually quickly, but the whole point of the visuals, yeah, was exactly that, is like, what can you learn in 5 minutes? So everyone's super busy all the time. We've got things to do. Yeah. We've got like products to build or whatever it might be. So what can you realistically learn in 5 minutes? And that's where I try and target the visuals, which is like, okay, here's event architectures. And like, I was at the top of the funnel, and the more I dive deep into it, the more this funnel just opens and it continues to open. But it's like, how do I compress this information with the experts? There's loads of smart people down here. How can you compress this and bring that back up the funnel so people can understand? Yeah. And the great thing about the Zettelkasten method too is, when you create these permanent notes and you create the second brain, you also create a link. You link back to resources. Where did you read that blog post 6 months ago or 3 months ago? Why does this link to cloud events now or yesterday? What are the things that are interesting? And then with the visuals, what I've done is literally every visual has like about 5 or 6 different resource links so people can go and dive deeper. but what you were saying about the PDF document, so... Next thing I decided to try and do, which is like, okay, how can we just package these visuals up into a PDF? So I was looking around online, but there's this awesome tool called Pandoc. I'm not sure I'd call it awesome, but it works. Yeah. I call Pandoc, which allows
heavy
you to
backpedal. Yeah. There's an average tool called.
I've had lots of kind of sleepless nights with that one. But Pandoc is a tool that allows you to kind of create I guess books or PDFs, whatever it is. And I experimented with a visual once, and I kind of remember I finally generated it, and I put it on this document, and I thought I kind of gave it an interesting content to be consumed. So from a website to a PDF is completely different, I felt. And then what I put on the website too, which I'll share a link, is you can actually download all the visuals. There's like 60 of them offline for free. So, you know, if you're commuting on a train, whatever it might be, or on a plane, you can just quickly look for a visual. And so they've been downloaded about 7,000 times, I think, at the moment.
Wow. And it updates as you add new ones, yeah.
That's right, yeah. So it's all automated. So as I add a new one, it runs a Pandoc script, and then it generates and uploads it into the cloud so people can download it.
Are you saying... It's event driven.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Should I be excited or afraid of AI? The answer is yes. It's both.
Things are going to look so different in the next couple years. You will not be ready for the disruptions that are going to come.
I'm Jeff Nielsen, host of Digital Disruption, the go-to podcast for technology leaders.
Our generation's conflict, I think, is going to be emotional, not economic.
The companies that are going to win are the ones that have a couple of characteristics.
Stay ahead of the curve with Digital Disruption. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
Love it.
I love how you commit and then you back. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a yes or no question, Dave.
Yeah, I guess it is. Yeah, it could probably be more event-driven. There's a bit of manual stuff to be done.
Okay,
it's event-driven.
Okay, yeah. Okay, got it. All right, very cool. All right, so let's. I want to kind of jump into them. First of all, we defined EDA hopefully well enough. I'm sure we could do better, but hopefully we got it. I think mine was better, but you know whatever. So we're going to go through this, and obviously, by now there should be a link. You'll see a link underneath on what we're talking about. And then we're going to talk about some of these specific visuals. And then we'll show links and you can go through those. But what is your favorite one?
I think you're going to ask this.
I did. Well, I would hope you would prepare for that. Yeah. Yeah. I'd really not answer.
They're all my children. I don't necessarily have a favorite one, but we can start with this one, which I think...
Later I'm going to ask you who your favorite child is, so be prepared for that as well. So.
Yeah, I'm prepared for that one.
I'm ready for that one.
So here's one. So let me just bring it up here. You should be able to see this. So this is kind of an early one that I did. It's mainly around, so as I said, event-driven architecture is just huge, huge concepts. And if you're into domain-driven design, which I recommend looking at, it also maps very well to event-driven architectures. And something I was looking at last year that I found very interesting is like the differences between messages and bounded context. And that's where this visual comes in.
Is actually, go ahead and give the name of it because folks are going to be looking at this afterwards. Yeah.
The name of the visual is called Messages Between Bounded Context.
Okay. So now I'm going to stop you. Okay.
Yeah.
So I want you to do some definition for us and you're limited on time to do this. So what is a bounded context? Right.
Yeah.
And then message, I think we understand, but kind of explain that idea. You probably were already going to do that. But I wanted to talk for a moment.
In domain-driven design terms, we kind of build our applications. Well, even outside this, think about your applications and the boundaries of these applications. For example, we have a fulfillment service, order service, payment service, all these different boundaries that exist, right? And if you map this to like team topologies, which I'm kind of exploring at the moment, is how do we structure our organization around these teams and around these boundaries? Right. That allow us to kind of innovate.
Hang on a sec. Did you say team apologies?
team topologies.
Your accent is killing me, Dave. Team topologies is the word. Topologies, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. All right.
Team, I was like, what? I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, go ahead. I totally blew your train of thought. I apologize. Please continue.
But anyway, going back to bounded context, it's about the boundary of your domain, right? And it's about how do we communicate. And when we look at event-driven architectures, is how we can use events or messages to communicate between these boundaries. And it's something I was thinking about a lot last year, which is like, okay, well, we can use events to communicate. That's great. I can publish an event right here and Eric is handling payments and he can receive this event and he can orchestrate and do whatever he wants. But there's much more to it than that. And this one I quite like a lot, which is, I talk about this in my reInvent talk last year, actually. It's all about like the different patterns you can use, depending on like the levels of coupling, I guess. Examples here. So there's a conformist pattern. So one thing I wasn't aware of when I started building event architectures is by default, we're all conforming. We're all conformists. So if I send Eric a payment event and Eric was to consume this event in his step functions workflow as an example, he is conforming to my schema and my standard. Okay. So we are now decoupled by nature with the boxes. If we were to draw them up, but we are now coupled between contract. Right, between schema.
Right.
And this can be good and it can be bad. Examples of it being bad is if I'm exposing implementation details as an example. So now you know about the orders, you know about order underscore ID, you know about order underscore, I don't know, fulfillment status. All these things, all these nuances, all these properties that you might not be aware of or want to know. And this is all about bounded context, all about levels of communication. And this, what this visual shows here is the differences between the communication and patterns that we can use. An example you can see here on the screen is like conformist pattern would be Eric conforms and takes it as it is. Anti-corruption layer here would be Eric, rather than conforming and taking it, he transforms it into the domain model and language that he can understand. An example of this would be Eric gets a payment event, so from me for whatever reason, or sorry, an order event from me. Eric chooses to map this event into something him and his team can understand, right? So we've now got the separation between these boundaries. And equally, on the open host service, we go back to me, Eric goes back to me, and we agree a standard. So these are very like small, very small details. But they can make a big impact in how you build your event architectures. And I like diving into this last year. There's some great resources on this page for you to dive deeper. But again, this is for me, comes back to, if I was to teach, and I do teach event architectures, it's like, you need to think about this stuff, some of this stuff.
To be honest, I hadn't heard of these. I've looked through your visual stuff. Maybe I haven't studied this one enough, but that's interesting. And so, as I do, I'm gonna take it to an Eric level, meaning I'm gonna dumb it down a little bit.
Yeah.
So we say like conformist pattern. I take the event as it is, and I'm gonna oversimplify and frustrate you. I already know that, But and then like anti-corruption layer, this is, I change that incoming event to match what I need. So there's a transformation of the event. Okay. So, all right. So I am getting that. So, okay.
Exactly. I'll give an example. Another example, literally today, I'm working actually service office hours. You probably see this back on repeat. Actually, I'm doing a Kafka and EventBridge integration on service office hours. So, so we will share a link with that. But an example here would be we got this Kafka stream connected to a broker, an event broker, which is EventBridge for us. And I'm consuming the Kafka stream of my partner, who was the on-prem engineer here. And I'm using something like input transformers with EventBridge to map that into an event that I understand that I want.
Okay.
So I'm no longer dealing with Kafka implementation details within step functions or within my service. I actually just push that outside the boundary of my service. So now I can talk about the domain language, which is orders, which is payments, which is a language in which we understand as an organization. I'm not talking about Kafka properties. I'm not talking about all these things.
Okay. So that's more than just remapping. Well, I guess when I first was thinking about it, it's like, you know, maybe injecting more data, but it could be remapping the data, renaming it. I mean, the data itself may stay the same, but keys might change so to a language you understand. Is that do I understand it correctly?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Okay. And I think both of them are valuable, which is like we can map the data into something we know. That's fair enough. But what happens if we need to get more information? You just said it there, right? That's something completely different. So what people tend to do, I think I have visuals on this, which is you can go back to the producer, you can go back to an API and request that information. But now you have to understand that you are now coupled again. You know, we're decoupled. I send you an event. I send you a notification event. And Eric says, thank you very much. I need more information. Where can I get this? You go back and ask me where the information is and you get it through an API. But now again, we're coupled. We're coupled through that contract. So there are patterns. There are other things to explore here about enrichment patterns, so we can enrich the event before Eric gets it. As I said, once we open this can of worms, we can keep going. And I'm not sure.
I'll pause there. But that takes us to another. Maybe it's in the same vein, and maybe you have a pattern for this or a visual. When you're creating the original event. And we talk about this a lot, you know, sparse events versus full events. Do you have a visual that addresses that?
Yeah.
Of course I do.
So here's one I have. I'd share it with you. So the visual is called Why Event Design is Important. And this one mainly talks about event design, but I actually have a talk I did for GoTo. Again, we'll share the links here around event design, about 45 minutes of it. But the key is really to understand the trade-offs between the choices that we're making, right? So, this is an interesting thing that I don't see a lot of people doing is actually treating event design as a first-class citizen. And what I mean by this is You often see people when we build APIs that we nurture APIs, we discuss APIs, we talk about APIs, we document APIs,
that's right.
All this stuff. We don't just one day wake up and like if we're building APIs between teams, you know, just implement it. There's a lot of thought and process because APIs have been around for decades and events have also been around for decades. But I think event-driven architecture is becoming more accessible to us. But the problem with event architectures is often we jump into the event without thinking about its design, because sometimes it's easy to do that. An example would be Eric, he needs to know about an order that has been created. So he tells the order service and the order service says, okay, well, that's fine. That's easy for me. I'll use a broker. Again, I'll use EventBridge as an example, set it up straightforward and I can publish a message on a managed event bus. Now, Eric hasn't asked me about the fields. We've not discussed the fields. We've not discussed about implementation details. We've not discussed about the design itself. We've not discussed if it's is it going to be minimal information? Is it going to be big and sparse, which is like event carriage state transfer? There's all these different terminologies. And what tends to happen if you dive in first is you'll get something. You'll say, thank you very much. In a week or 2 weeks or 2 days or 2 years, you'll come back and say, this isn't what I need. We need to go bigger and bigger and bigger. And then we have breaking changes. We have versioning problems. We have all these things. So that's why I'm saying event design, event first thinking is super important. And what I mean, and when you start there, and this visual can help you, is talking about, are we going to use notification events? Are we going to use event carry state transfer events? Are we going to use Delta events? There's even time series events as an example. So think about the domain. Think about the language we're talking about. As I mentioned earlier, does Eric need to know about order implementation details? Probably not. What does Eric need to know about? He needs to know about the order language as a business. So when your product owner or your product manager is talking to Eric about, we need to implement this particular thing, what is an order? An order is something that a customer has placed. What's inside of an order? An order is this, is this, is this. We need to represent that in our models. We need to represent that in our events. So there are tons, as I said, you can keep going with this, but it's very important. The one takeaway here is just think about your event design. It can really just help you as you build EDA.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Now in its fifth season, Inspiring Tech Leaders is the podcast that talks about technology strategies, challenges, and breakthroughs shaping today's digital world. Each week, Inspiring Tech Leaders brings you technology reviews and interviews with visionary CIOs, CTOs, and industry pioneers. Whether you're leading a tech team or just love innovation, Inspiring Tech Leaders is your go-to source for inspiration and real-world advice. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform.
So I'm gonna instead of push back, but I like the API conversation, and I'm gonna warn you. The next question I'm gonna ask you, because we've got 10 minutes left, about okay, because I know we can go for years on this, but I want to know the most complex pattern you have, visual you have, and why was it complex for you to come up with, and while you're grabbing that, I'm just throwing things at Dave. I was trying to think something really hard, so I would like it alphabetized, and no, I'm just kidding. It's interesting to me, though, you're right. The whole conversation around APIs, if I'm building an API contract, I'm doing it right. If I don't get the right data, I reject the call, right? That's not the contract. Therefore, I don't do it. So it is critical that A and B, or Eric and Dave, both agree on what's coming in, what's being sent, what I'll accept and stuff like that. Whereas this is kind of an interesting, it's a change in the mindset with event-driven architecture. Is Dave's kicking out events, and he doesn't know who's consuming him a lot of the times. So there's a lot of this is kind of done, and it's designed by, that's by design. This gives us our ability to build these massively distributed applications, because now I'm not having to do a contract with everybody who wants to talk to me. Now I'm just kicking out an event and saying, here it is. But that you're right. That event design, what happens is as more and more people come back going, you know what? I need this and I need this and I need this. Your event has gone from the sparse little fast thing, easy to process, to this cumbersome, bloated, double, event. So again, I agree that the planning of events is huge and critical.
Yeah. And I think that's a very interesting thing you said there is that we don't know
everything I say is interesting.
we don't know who the consumers are, and that's true. What tends to happen with event architectures easily is this idea in the big ball of mud, but is that you don't know who's consuming what, meaning we don't know how to change things. But what recommendation I would have there is thinking about the level of coupling between the systems. And what I mean by this is, you can use brokers, we can use channels to communicate messages and events within a boundary, within a system. An example of this, if I was the order service and we wanted to use SNS, we wanted to use EventBridge, whatever it is, or Kafka within our system ourselves, the way in which we can change these contracts and communicate these changes is a lot easier than if it was an integration between teams in the organization. Yeah. And then even beyond that, if I was publishing events to cross-organization, right? These contracts are completely different. Then you have no idea who's consuming you, right? So there's different levels of governance and management that you need to do, depending on how, I guess, the events are consumed too. So,
yeah. And here's the deal, Dave. This is not in your visuals, but I'd like it to be created as a visual. If you get that wrong, then there's a lot of team apologies. So,
yeah, plenty of team apologies.
Team apologies, exactly. Yeah. That's right. So I would there like is. That to be Eric Johnson said that first. So there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have this last one, understanding event delivery failures. Yeah.
Yeah.
This would be complicated.
So just figuring out what happens when your events fail to be delivered, right? Is we always, right. If we code for happy path, that's fine. But what about if your event gets replayed? What happens if Eric processes the payment twice? We can't have that, right? So one way is we handle that is through idempotent consumers. Have we processed this before? Have we looked at this before? And this is something we need to think about, which I recommend people thinking about, is how do you design that architecture with these thoughts up front? What happens if the event fails to get delivered? Do you capture it or do you let it drop on the floor? What happens if you just let them drop? Is that a problem? Or should we capture them in dead letter queues? Should we reprocess them, replay them? Should we redrive them? And every broker out there has different retry policies and all sorts of things. So if you're using a broker, it's worth just diving into its documentation, understanding these nuances, understanding the retries, the failures, what can be configured, what can't be configured. And when you're building your event architectures and your systems, just ask yourself that question of, okay, that's fine, Eric, thank you very much. What happens if I don't send this event? Right. What happens if you fail to receive this? What happens if you know? Right. And Eric, I know you've done lots of on idempotency before in your talks.
Yeah.
How do you handle the idempotency stuff?
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, at Amazon, when we talk about services, we talk about, you know, order, you know, this is, you know, guaranteed order, or we talk about at least once delivery. And that's a real critical thing when you're talking about, yeah, I do a whole talk on idempotency and how do you, before you, I mean, obviously there's, you know, I go through the database, look for duplicates. Well,
yeah,
if you're doing that, it's probably too late, right? So when you process the payment twice, that my mom has called me and freaking out, right? But yeah, the understanding the cost, and it comes down to cost, right? What is the cost if we charge someone twice? Well, there's credibility, there's you know, the hassle of recovering that, there's different things like that. What is the cost if we don't take the payment at all and we go back to the customer and say, hey, there was an error, can we run this again? Well, there's still some credibility, but there's all, you know, so there's a balance there, and that's just obviously one of millions and millions of examples. But yeah, the like every good technical, you know, conversation, the answer is it depends. You know, it depends on, you know, what is important, what is the cost factor, what can you afford to let drop, what can you not afford to let drop. A lot of conversations around that. So. All right. Well, this I'm going to have to stop us because Dave is a runaway train. He'll keep just going. But I'm going to, in just a minute, I'm going to have you do shameless plug, Dave. Do you have anything you want to throw out there? But if you haven't checked out the visuals, I really encourage you to. We've got the link to them all. Dave, how many are there?
I think it's about 60.
That's pretty good. Yeah. That's pretty good. And then there'll be 61 after we add the team apology one that I do want to see on there. So 61, this is 61. There you go. And so I really encourage you, if you're struggling with EDA, if you're trying to learn EDA, this is a great place to look. If you're not looking at EDA, then you need to look at this. And you need to come visit us at EDA Day. Again, a shameless plug there. But EDA, the abilities, and this is really interesting when we talk about interchangeability with service. AWS didn't invent EDA. We certainly didn't. EDA has been around since, I think, the 80s. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Almost as long as I've been around. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's hard, right? Event-driven architecture is hard, but the wins you get out of it, you know, the robustness of your systems, you know, it's important. And with serverless, and I love the statement, and Dave, I want to see if you agree with this. Mm-hmm. I've said it before, not all EDA is serverless, but all serverless is EDA. What do you think? Agree, disagree? He's running through his head. He's trying to catch me. He doesn't agree. Yeah,
no, I'm joking.
So there's probably some caveats there, but with serverless, we've made EDA very graspable. And so I encourage you to check that out. D, Dave, you have anything you want to throw out before we have to wrap it up here?
Not a lot, no. There's some, we have on serverlessland.com, we have loads of guides around EDA stuff. The visuals live there. We have loads of videos we're on the serverless DA team at AWS. So if you check out some of our videos on YouTube, I done one last year on the journey to event-driven architectures. So if you're if you're just starting out, or if you're on your journey, I cover lots of the stuff in the visuals and actually a talk and present. So I recommend that. And equally, please reach out to myself or Eric if you've got questions. Or if you enjoyed it or whatever else. Love to speak to you, and if you can come to the EDA days that we do, fantastic. Let us know.
Yeah, if you're in the London area, that'll be great to see you. We also want to thank GoTo for letting us do this. We love GoTo. We love working with them. And so with that, we thank you. Stay unscripted.
I don't know. You don't have to do that.
You can be scripted. But it just seemed like the thing to say. With that, we're gonna say see you later. Dave, thanks for joining me.
Cool. And, cheers, Larry.
Yeah, we'll see you in the next meeting.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.